The scale is like security and reliability. If you don't build it in from the start, if you don't develop your algorithms and concepts with scale and resiliency in mind, you can't add it later on. And it's also one of the things that is the hardest to describe when people ask me, so what's the secret sauce? The secret sauce is not necessarily one thing. It's 100 decisions and ways in how we design the architecture and the algorithms to be scalable that makes a difference, that allowed us to scale. If this had happened with the development of the MVP, I think we would still be in the lab. I'm Björn Kolbeck. I'm a co-founder and CEO of Quobyte.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
It's 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing on the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what to do next.
It took many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
A company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a
pain. Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Laphart. And today, how Björn Kolbeck is enabling you to accelerate innovation by giving you simple and powerful enterprise storage. This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools lack proper security, putting sensitive data at risk. With Kiteworks MFT, companies can send automated or ad hoc files in a fully integrated, highly secure manner. The solution is FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense and has been so since 2017. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. This episode is sponsored by ClearQuery. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. With Ask ClearQuery, you can find valuable insights into your data using plain English. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify your data analytics with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. When asked about his life outside of tech, Björn Kolbeck stated, "Is there anything outside of tech?" He has made his hobby into his job, being exposed to his first computer at 11 and dreaming of being a programmer. But outside of tech, he's a father of two kids. He loves going to the gym and traveling, which he mentioned was a luxury at his current venture. For personal travel, he loved visiting Costa Rica, as the people are friendly, the country is beautiful, and it's safe. Björn started a PhD program and was part of a large project with the goal to build a distributed version of Linux. Within this program, he met his now co-founder, and they were responsible for a package within that project surrounding data management. Little did they know that the exciting part of the project would later turn into a separate distributed file system. This is the creation story of Quobyte.
Quobyte is the name of the company and the product. We do a parallel file system that's all in software. We like to call it the world's easiest parallel file system because that's one of the things we focused on, making it really easy and robust so that people can use our software to run large-scale storage infrastructures when we talk about tens to hundreds of petabytes, so lots of machines, lots of disks and flash drives that can fail. So that's Quobyte in a nutshell. After I graduated from university, I was looking for interesting things to do and came across a research institute in Berlin, the CUS Institute, where a group was doing research into distributed systems. So I started basically a PhD/research program. It was part of a large European project called ExtremeOS, so funded by the European Commission with partners from maybe 15 European partners. And the goal was to build a distributed version of Linux for grid computing, as it was called back then. So basically, collaborators from different universities spread geographically and building a Linux distribution for them. I joined them, and this is how I met my co-founder, Felix Supfeld, because he was already working there as a PhD student, and he basically hired me to work with him on that project. As part of that project, we were responsible for they called it package, basically data management. And the fun part was that this was very open-ended. So we were supposed to do something exciting around data management for grid computing. And in that package, we had the Barcelona Supercomputing Center as a partner and NEC, their high performance computing division in Stuttgart. And so we started to develop ideas and came up with the idea of building a distributed parallel file system. Back then, I had no idea what that really meant. But when you get those research projects, you have funding for 3 to 5 years to really investigate and try out new ideas. So we started figuring out how do distributed parallel file systems work, what's out there in the market, what's interesting, what's not so interesting, what is software storage. And that's how basically we started a project called ExtremeFS. So a distributed parallel file system for grid computing, really focused also on the high performance computing aspect.
Let's dive into the MVP then. So the first version of Qobyte that you built, how long did it take to build and what sort of tools were you using to bring it to life?
That's a bit hard when you do, I guess, infrastructure software in general, but especially storage. Your minimum viable product is actually a full product. There isn't really any corners you can cut. Storage has to work. Someone said, I don't remember who it was, that storage is the only thing that has to work when the lights go off in the data center. You can rip out the networking, you can rip out compute, but storage has to always work. If people don't get their data back, they get very angry. So the minimum viable product was actually a full file system. So when we started Qobyte in late 2013, it took us about 2.5 years to build the first version of Qobyte that we could give to our launch customer to use for a production environment. We had the advantage that with ExtremeFS, we already knew what worked and what didn't work in terms of architecture. So we could use that as a guideline for how to implement it. So that's how we were able to start very quickly and get to this working version within 2.5 years, but that's what it basically took.
So within that time frame, you've got to make certain decisions and trade-offs to get a product out there, right? And cutting scope, accepting technical debt, all the sort of things, right? And I imagine, you know, in having to build a total file system, like the MVP is different than just, you know, move fast and break things. You've got to get it right. You probably had to make some really interesting decisions and trade-offs. Tell me about some of those and how you cope with those decisions.
File system reliability is key. So the standard unit testing is nice and it's a must-have, but you have to go further than that. So you have to use standard file system benchmark tools to regularly test the system against. I think that was one of the first things after implementing the internal prototype. The first things one of our engineers did was building a distributed test platform where we can really automatically roll out the current master branch into a basically production cluster and then hammer it with homegrown test tools, but also the industry standard test tools that you find out there, including tools like FIO, SpecSFS, and so on, and just make sure that there aren't any regressions in the software. So I think the testing aspect, doing that right from the start, was probably the most important decision.
This episode is sponsored by CacheFly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where CacheFly comes in. CacheFly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, CacheFly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only CacheFly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5 TB CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cachefly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. You've got the MVP, it's working, and, you know, MVP is relative here, right? You spent the 2 years, get the product up and running. I'm just curious about how you progressed the product from that point and how you matured it. And I think to wrap that in a box a little bit, what I'm looking for is how you built your roadmap and how you went about deciding, okay, this is the next most important thing to build or to address with Qobyte.
That the file system API looks very simple. If you look at the POSIX standard, or if you look at the Linux band pages that define how a read and write should behave, it looks pretty straightforward, but the devil is really in the detail of how applications use it and are basically using semantics that works on Linux or works on NFS that isn't necessarily documented. So for us, the challenge was then to expand the use cases. We started our journey with OpenStack and virtual machines. Late 2015, early 2016, OpenStack was all the rave. Everyone wanted to build their own infrastructure, cloud-like infrastructure. So that's what we started with. And then we started onboarding more use cases with different applications. And I think this is how our roadmap was shaped. So doing one after the other, discovering new semantics or a certain behavior, or also things at scale. It's very different whether you run a cluster with, I don't know, 10 nodes or whether you run a cluster with 250 nodes. You suddenly have very different problems that come through scale. So those are the two dimensions how we basically developed the roadmap for the product, or how the roadmap was driven by those two. And then, of course, you add features to the product. Some of them are, I would say, for us, features that are outside of the I/O path, so basically where applications to read and write are easier to implement, while other features are more complex if they touch this path, because then you need to be more careful, you need to do more thorough testing, you need to have a plan of how to roll that out to better customers before you basically make a GA.
I'm curious about team and how you went about deciding, or what you looked for in people to help you decide these are the right people to hire, these are the right horses to join the team, right? So tell me about that process. How did you build your team?
We were lucky because we were able to basically hire some of our former coworkers from research days, because they already knew the project. Some of them have worked for us as research students, others have worked in the same department and we knew them and their style. So they joined us early on and have been with the company since then. They needed minimal onboarding and they could hit the ground running. And then we looked for people that fit in with the culture. Culture meaning in that case that we have an outlier. We are not big fans of distributed teams for development. We like to have everyone in the same room because it's just great for creativity and communication. The team, we saw that things slow down when people are not in the office, because communication is just so much more difficult and you have to have a lot of meetings versus having everyone in a big room and you can listen to what the others say and add to their discussion when you think that you know something they don't know about your part of the system that you're working on. Finding people that are willing to work on site in Berlin that know either distributed systems or have a background in systems, so for example, Linux kernel development, good handle on distributed systems or key value stores. Finding those wasn't easy and still is not easy.
This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools are dated and lack the security that today's remote workforce demands. Companies that continue relying on outdated technology put their sensitive data at risk. And that's where Kiteworks comes in. Kiteworks MFT is absolutely the most secure MFT on the market today. It has been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. Through FedRAMP, Kiteworks' level of security compliance provides a fast route to CMMC compliance, saving customers time, effort, and money. Kiteworks MFT makes it easy for users to send automated or ad hoc files via fully integrated shared folders and email. Administrators can manage policies in a unified console and create custom integrations using their API. Did we mention it's secure? The level of security with Kiteworks solution is rare to find. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's KiteWorks.com. Hello, welcome to the Data Analytics Club. Do you know the password?
No, didn't know there was one.
Do you know how to code?
No.
Do you know how to query data?
Like, ask a question? I guess not.
I see. Then you can't be in this club. Sorry. Goodbye. Don't be left out of the Analytics Club. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. ClearQuery provides you with the information you need without requiring you to do the heavy lifting. Their Ask ClearQuery feature allows you to ask questions in plain English, helping you find relationships and connections in your data that may have previously gone unnoticed. You can even visualize your data with presentation mode, taking your data storytelling to the next level. Pricing is based on storage, not licenses, and that ensures that you get the most bang for your buck. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify data analytics, your data analytics, with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. This episode is sponsored by Cachefly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where Cachefly comes in. Cachefly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, Cachefly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only Cachefly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, CodeStory listeners can get a 5 TB CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cachefly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. So this will be super interesting because this is your bread and butter. It has to be built into the product, but I'm curious about scale. How do you think about scale when building Quobyte? How did you think about it? Was it built to scale from day one in that, you know, 2 years MVP timeframe, or with scale in mind? Or are there interesting areas where you've had to fight it as you've grown?
I think this is where we had a huge advantage, that we were able to develop the ideas as part of a research project. Because scale is like security and reliability, or fault tolerance. If you don't build it in from the start, if you don't develop your algorithms and concepts with scale and resiliency in mind, you can't add it later on. And you can see products that really suffer from this because they weren't designed for scale. And then they start adding on. And then you end up with, what was it, Monty Python's Royal Society of putting things on top of other things. And we know what that means for software. So this is something, scale and resiliency, that you need to design into your algorithms and the architecture from the ground up. And it's also one of the things that is the hardest to describe. When people ask me, so what's the secret sauce? The secret sauce is not necessarily one thing. It's 100 decisions and ways in how we design the architecture and the algorithms to be scalable that makes the difference, that allowed us to scale. If this had happened with the development of the MVP, I think we would still be in the lab or trying to do that and struggle with scale. Just to give you an example, we have Chrome replication at the core of how we make data redundant. When you do this kind of replication, you have to agree on who's the leader for a certain period of time, the primary. And if you're designing this leader election process is crucial. If you rely on a centralized component there, you have a limit for scalability. So part of what I did as my PhD thesis was how to develop an algorithm that can do this peer-to-peer between the nodes that share the data. And this allowed us to basically scale to thousands of data nodes without a problem because they just talk to their peers that have the data and not a centralized component. So it's decisions like that that you have to do from the start. I think this is in distributed systems, it is the key. It's like trying to bolt on security. You can't do it. You have to design it from the ground up.
Okay, Bjorn, as you step out on the balcony, you look across all that you've built. What are you most proud of?
I think I'm really proud of our product because we have been working on it for a long time. And seeing it from having weird ideas in a room as a researcher that just gets started to developing something that's research prototype and then writing my PhD thesis, it was all very abstract. But now when I visit customers and I see their Quobyte clusters with almost 100 petabytes in production, I see what they build on top of our, or using our storage infrastructure, our software, it's very satisfying, to be honest. If I think back like 10, 15 years, it looked like something abstract and now it's happening. So that is something that makes me proud. And also looking at the team that built this, I think we have a very efficient team when it comes to coding. I'm always impressed how much they achieve in a short time frame. So that this team has been with us for a long time and made this happen, I think that's the two things I'm really proud of.
Okay, let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
I think the more interesting ones are the ones where you think you're smarter than other people. I definitely made a mistake when I thought that I could reduce latencies in the processing of certain operations that come via UDP packets. And I thought that I could play with core pinning, basically instructing Linux that I have real-time priority and that I pin certain tasks to certain CPUs to reduce the latency because then the kernel might not move them around. And in the end, I created a big mess where the kernel had a hard time scheduling my process at all. Part of it was like, I probably should have dug deeper to understand more about this before trying to be smarter than the people that wrote the scheduler. Maybe it's sometimes the lesson here is it's okay. Other people are smarter than you when it comes to certain things, and you should just accept that.
I'm excited to hear the passion in what you've built. What does the future look like for Quobyte, the product, and for your team?
We have a pretty good roadmap. Part of it is, of course, you mentioned the technical debt initially. Every startup accumulates technical debt, and then we spend the last 2 years cleaning up a lot of that. And it's sometimes a bit of a painful process because you push back features, customers are waiting for features, and everyone loves announcements and so on. But reducing the technical debt, paying that back, has come to fruition. So we are now reaping the benefits of that, and it's like you come through this valley of tears just pushing through, and I think it was also painful for the developers because it's not the most fun thing. It's fun to do the 80%, not the 20%, but we can see that now, and then I see how the agility improved for implementing new features. So we have RDMA on the roadmap, we have the tiering to external cloud storage coming up very soon, so all those things I'm fairly excited about. And then the stuff under the hood that no one really sees, but that we see in terms of robustness and quality.
Okay, Bjorn, let's switch to you. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why.
I'm always impressed by very creative people like artists, because creating, you always stand on the shoulder of giants, as I say, there's stuff before. I don't think I have one person I would say is my absolute role model. I think there are people that I find impressive with their work, people you can relate to. For example, just randomly, Stacey Abrams, how she worked to turn Georgia blue during the last elections. I think it's just impressive that people can do this despite all the obstacles, and you fall over, you stumble, you get punched so many times, but you stand up again and again and you don't give up. I should also say that, like her, because she's a big Star Trek fan, she even had her cameo in Star Trek Discovery. And her favorite author is Haruki Murakami, so I was like, oh yeah, I can relate to that. But I think this ability to overcome adversity, and even if everyone tells you no, you can't do it, just do it. I find that impressive.
Bjorn, last question. So you're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
If they're like me and are a technical founder, don't underestimate marketing and sales. I think this is one of the mistakes I made, arrogance of a techie coming from Google. You know, tech is hard, marketing and sales is easy. Just, you know, put people into it and that's it. But I would definitely say understand your customers very well. I really love being in front of customers because that's, in the end, when you talk to customers and prospects, that's how you learn. And you should always do that. I'm always skeptical when, you know, the founders hide behind teams. With marketing, you have to learn, you have to value it, you have to learn how it works. Unless you have a founder that understands marketing and sales very well, you should try to understand it better and see how valuable and important it is. It's not all about the tech.
I think that's fantastic advice. Well, Bjorn, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Quillbyte.
Thank you for having me, Noah.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.